Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. 4 weeks from today, on November 4th, American voters go to the polls. The pace of the presidential campaign is picking up, and in some quarters, the campaign rhetoric is getting harsher. Neil Strauser reports from Chicago.
Ever more loudly, President Carter is insisting there is a difference. But with Ronald Reagan refusing to debate, there's a clear White House fear showing that the time is growing too short to demonstrate it. 29 days aren't long, Mr. Carter told a Chicago fundraiser last night, and the message is difficult to get across, he said, in the hurly-burly of a campaign. And so he raised his rhetoric.
This is my last campaign, the last political race that I will ever run. I do not intend for it to end by turning the government of the United States over to people whose political philosophy and views about this country are directly contrary to everything in which I believe with all my heart and soul. We must work together because the alternative is too doubtful, too bleak to contemplate.
You must decide whether the nation is unified, said Mr. Carter, or if I lose, whether Americans might be separated black from white, Jew from Christian, North from South, rich from poor. The volume is rising, and with just 4 weeks to go, Mr. Carter added trips to Florida, New York, Illinois, and Missouri in the next few days as he tries to make someone hear. Neil Strauser, CBS News, with the Carter campaign.
The president is back at the White House today while Reagan campaigns in Pennsylvania and Ohio. Stephanie Shelton reports that yesterday in Connecticut, the Republican nominee was appealing for the ethnic vote, and he's doing the same thing today.
Reagan again showed his drawing power in heavily Democratic ethnic areas as he strolled through New Haven, Connecticut's small Italian-American section, an area that's become a symbol of neighborhood solidarity beyond state borders, aides say, because of its residents' refusal to move out when urban renewal came in during the 1950s. The search for the ethnic vote continues today. Reagan talking to Polish Americans in Pennsylvania and steel workers and coal miners in Steubenville, Ohio, a city aides say that is 62% Italian-American. Ohio is a major battleground in this presidential election, and Reagan aides say right now it appears to be leaning toward their man. But the candidate will be taking no chances, spending a lot of time in Ohio between now and November 4th, hoping to consolidate his apparent appeal to conservative but normally Democratic ethnics into concrete Republican votes. Stephanie Shelton, CBS News, with the Reagan campaign in Trevose, Pennsylvania.
The latest CBS News New York Times poll paints a bright picture for Reagan in his home state with its 45 electoral votes, and we'll hear about that from Leslie Stahl.
The California poll is not encouraging for President Carter. It gives Reagan a 12-point lead, 40-28%, with John Anderson trailing behind with 11%. More than one-fifth of the California electorate remains undecided. The Carter campaign is running anti-Reagan TV ads in California, intended to revive negative feelings toward the former governor. But the California electorate overwhelmingly remembers Reagan as doing a good job as governor. Even the Democrats split evenly on that question. As for the Democrats, the polls show the president holding only half of them. And although he is clearly ahead among union families, he is not doing any better than he did 4 years ago when he lost the state. He is way ahead among blacks, but another larger group essential to the president's chances may not vote. Less than half of the state's Hispanics are registered. Mr. Carter's real problems in the state show up among whites. The poll finds Reagan with a 2-to-1 lead. Some Carter strategists have urged that the money budgeted for California be transferred to other, more promising states. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, New York.
The poll has a margin of sampling error of plus or minus 4 percentage points. CBS News correspondent Bob Faugh, covering the Anderson campaign, reports that the independent candidate is having trouble drumming up support among black leaders. He's baffled that more of them haven't endorsed him. Faugh says Anderson is no longer troubled by the possibility that the black vote he siphons away from the president could tip the election to Reagan. Anderson suggests that Mr. Carter's tactics in trying to keep Anderson off the ballot and out of campaign debates smack of the Nixon White House. Iraqi forces are still on the move today inside Iran's most strategically important region. Both sides are rushing in reinforcements. Larry Pintak reports from Baghdad.
The fall of Khorram Shah deprives Iran of one of its main oil ports and helps Baghdad solidify its control over the Shatt al-Arab. Fighting continues along the waterway this morning. Iraqi troops are consolidating their position at the port and attempting to silence the remaining pockets of resistance in the city itself. Iraq is now expected to turn its attention to winning nearby Abadan. where the Middle East's largest refinery has been largely destroyed by artillery bombardment. Should Abadan fall, Tehran will be cut off from the bulk of its oil resources. Iraqi armored columns have been moving toward the area all weekend, and bridge-building equipment has been sighted on the Iraqi side of the river in preparation for the final assault. Larry Pintak, CBS News, Baghdad.
Jordan's King Hussein has declared open and full support for Iraq, the first Arab chief of state to take that step. Hussein has ordered mobilization of all transport vehicles to bring food and supplies to the Iraqi army. This morning, a Kuwaiti newspaper quotes Jordanian sources as saying that Jordan has massed 40,000 troops on the Iraqi border, along with heavy tanks and ground-to-air missiles, for use against Iran if requested by Baghdad. A Saudi newspaper this morning says Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates have jointly agreed to raise their crude oil production by a total of 3 million barrels a day. They now produce about 12.5 million barrels daily combined. The increase, reported, would offset most of the losses caused by the Iranian-Iraqi war. All of the passengers of the cruise ship Prince and Dom, which caught on fire over the weekend in the Gulf of Alaska, are now back in the continental United States. Susan Spencer has details in Anchorage.
The last of the Prince and Dom's passengers arrived in Seattle last night. Their belongings in shopping bags, their one main thought to get home today. A lot of time yesterday was spent simply getting organized, trying to make arrangements for family members separated in the accident to be reunited. And there was a lot of time for the passengers to compare notes. The consensus, many congratulations to the Coast Guard. Some mixed reviews for the captain of the ship, but few compliments to the crew, who many said jumped into the lifeboats ahead of the passengers. Dorothy Turner of Overland Park, Kansas.
Most of the crew are Indonesian, and many of them very young, and I think that they panicked because, of course, they are trained not to get in first, except those who are to row the lifeboat.
They did get in first?
They jumped in ahead of the passengers, many of them, and they did not row. It had a mechanical rower in the center. The passengers had to row the boat.
Few of those aboard mentioned any plans for legal action against Holland America Lines. Most seemed to feel that the accident was just that, an unexpected end to a cruise which, as the brochures always promise, will provide an experience you'll never forget. Susan Spencer, CBS News, Anchorage, Alaska.
As for the Prince and Dom, she's still on fire and adrift off the Alaskan coast. Bad weather has kept the Coast Guard from putting firefighting crews aboard the ship. Researchers at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore have announced some remarkable advances against certain types of cancer, types that fail to respond to conventional treatment. CBS News science and medicine correspondent Charles Crawford reports on this entirely new kind of therapy.
The new treatment is being tested on liver, nerve cell, bone, and lung cancers. The most dramatic results are seen in advanced liver cancer patients, where the malignancy usually kills within 3 to 4 months. At Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, the experimental therapy has more than doubled the expected survival time. The technique, called radiation immunology, involves exposing laboratory animals to ferritin, a human protein found in a number of malignant tumors. The animals produce antibodies against ferritin, which are isolated. Iodine-131 is added, and the patient receives an injection of the now radioactive antibodies. The cancer-killing magic bullet concentrates at the site of the tumor. Normal healthy tissue is not affected, and there are virtually no side effects from the internal radiation. X-rays show a sharp reduction in the size of the tumor, and in some cases, the cancer all but disappears. The Johns Hopkins team says it's ready to treat as many as 100 advanced liver cancer patients a year, and within 5 to 10 years, expects to see the radioactive magic bullet in use against many other forms of cancer. Charles Crawford, CBS News, New York.
The price of gold went up just a bit today on the European markets. It was fixed in London at $679.50 an ounce. The dollar gained against all the major foreign currencies, including the yen.